got the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday life?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of three who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom of one, learning to balance work and home and trying to find a little bit of time to work on something just for fun.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Welcome to episode 9 of the Chasing Creative Podcast here in season 5. We are wrapping up the season before the craziness of summer ensues, but we really wanted to check in on how we are both doing with our creative projects in the wake of what we are kind of calling our Growing Gills moment, where we both read Growing Gills and had that big aha moment of, I'm not working on what I really want to work on, and here's how I'm going to change that. So we also want to talk a little bit about what we're calling self-talk and give you guys an idea of what we're going to be doing over our summer hiatus as well. So Ashley, remind everyone what your Growing Gills aha moment was.
I think that for me, Growing Gills really taught me the value of choosing one thing, which I think is something that it also taught you as well, and focusing on that one thing and then being consistent, doing a little bit of daily work, even if it feels like it's almost nothing. That is what we talked about a lot in our last episode, and it's kind of all just coincided with this epiphany that we've had about self-talk, which you sent me a podcast episode to listen to called The Moment with Brian Koppelman. And this particular episode was an interview with Seth Godin. And in this interview, Brian asks Seth what kind of self-talk he used in order to pull himself out of his first big business failure. And Seth gave this big response about how he used to listen to Zig Ziglar tapes, who's like a motivational kind of speaker guy. He used to listen to these tapes over and over and over again until they were basically memorized. And he had sort of internalized this message that Ziglar kept pointing out in his tapes, reminding him that he could carry on past this failure. He could go on to do more things. And the failure didn't define him. And it's a really interesting conversation about the importance of audio conditioning and the point that if you listen to what you need to hear often enough, it cements itself and it becomes part of you. And that's where you made this really great connection with the work that we have been doing in this podcast for, has it been 3 years or 4 years? I can't even remember how long it's been.
4 years, maybe?
4 years. Yeah.
Maybe three, maybe just three. Yeah. Kind of crazy. And I remember sending you this podcast to listen to because it was good. It had a lot of good things to say. And I was as typing out like, these are my comments on this episode or whatever. I had that thought that, wait a minute, what Seth Godin is saying Zig Ziglar did for him is kind of what I feel like Chasing Creative has done for us, even though we're the ones creating the podcast. It's basically been us for the last 4 years, having other people tell us their story of how they find time to be creative and why being creative is important. And you and I ourselves have talked about why we think it's important to be creative and to spend our time in that manner. And even though our podcast has been very much about figuring out how to make that happen, over and over and over again, it's been the stuff that we need to hear. Maybe not even just our audience, but us personally. And that's why I feel like we've always chosen guests that resonate with us in real life and not just the next big person to interview on the podcast. And it's really just cemented for both of us that our creative work is worth it, that we are spending our time valuably, and that we should keep doing it and making time for it. over and over and over again. We've heard that message. And maybe finally, after 3 or 4 years, we have internalized that and started actually making progress on the projects that really matter to us. Because I think the thing that I'm walking away from Growing Gills with the most is that I'm really good at being distracted by shiny new things, and I really, really need to focus on the one thing that actually matters. And that, I think, has been the learning point for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And with that whole thought of internalizing the messages that we most need to hear, it reminded me of like being in high school. I went to a Christian high school, and one of our assignments was memorizing Bible verses, which I really, really hated because I'm not very good at word for word memorization, and I did not grow up in a background where that was a thing that you did. I'm Catholic, and the school that I went to for grade school was just not, like, there was not an emphasis on memorizing scripture. And I just did not see the point. And I was really whiny about it until finally a teacher sat me down and was like, okay, here's why we do this. It's so that someday you will be in a situation where you need these verses to uplift you and support you and speak truth to you and whatever. And if you have not memorized them, they can't be there for you. And that's kind of what this is that we're doing here. Like you said, like, we are just repeating these phrases to ourselves over and over and over again, and these messages, and our guests are saying it, and finally it's just sticking. And I'm not sure. Okay, so what's your opinion? How much of this do you think has to do with the timing in our lives just being right, and how much of it has to do with, oh, we've been hearing this message for like 4 years, we just can't ignore it anymore?
Am I allowed to say both?
Yes, definitely.
I think it's definitely a bit serendipitous that we read Growing Gills partly at the beginning of a year. So you've got like that new year, new goal energy. But also, we're both in a place right now where, in theory, our children mostly sleep through the night. And maybe nap times are fairly stabilized, at least for the youngest of them. And we actually can take a little bit more time for ourselves than we can in those new newborn seasons, or even that like first year with the first baby. You just have no idea what to expect in each new stage. And I really feel like we both landed in a good place in our life, and that reading Growing Gills was, I mean, serendipitous. I'm going to use that word again. It was the right thing at the right time. I always love when books find you at the right time. And I also think we, throughout the last couple of years, as we have gone through Chasing Creative and emailed guests, we've really honed our lives in a way that we maybe hadn't 3 to 4 to 5 years ago. Even if we were in the same exact place with the number of kids we have and how well they're sleeping 4 to 5 years ago, we've made a lot of tiny decisions in the last couple of years based on what we've done with Chasing Creative that have set us up for success. I know I wouldn't be here in this place right now, able to devote as much time as I am to writing my own stuff, if I hadn't last October said, this is an unsustainable business model that I'm chasing. I need to cut my client roster in half. And I did. And that's given me just enough breathing room in the new year that I can start carving out just a little bit of time here and there for my own things without it taking away from the rest of life.
Yeah, that is a really good explanation of how this all this like magical moment came to be. And I did something similar with my business right around the time I got pregnant with my third baby. I was like, this is unsustainable. I can't keep doing this. I have to change up my business model. And even just thinking about the number of times that we have exchanged ideas here that I think spurs us on to more creativity and to more in-depth thought about the way that we're structuring our lives, where you don't necessarily get those perspectives if you're not speaking things out loud. And how often in our regular lives do we just walk up to people and be like, well, this is what my work life looks like right now, and this is what I would like my creative life to look like? I mean, that just doesn't happen. So we've basically put ourselves in this position to be constantly workshopping with each other and with our guests, and just constantly re-looking at our lives from different angles and thinking, oh, how could we make this better? Oh, we're actually not satisfied with how this thing is going right now. Whereas otherwise, you're right, we probably would not have set ourselves up to be in this position if we had not been podcasting. And so this is just kind of a, I don't know, like a cool realization that creating something, this podcast, that we thought was going to kind of be nothing and just be for fun, has actually led to creating more stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of the cheapest therapy out there.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So I think, too, as reading Growing Gills at the same time and having this light bulb moment at the same time, I mean, it's also, I mean, kind of like going through class with someone at the same time or through a workshop with someone at the same time. Like, you're going to learn kind of the same things alongside of each other, and you're going to bring your own perspective because you have a perspective of your own that you bring to the table. But at the same time, you guys are going to internalize the lessons, the same lessons, over and over again together. And so it shouldn't surprise me that we both realized what we wanted to be doing was different than what we were actually doing and made the switch.
Yeah. I would be so curious to hear if any of our regular listeners had like similar epiphanies throughout the years, if they had a similar realization that like, oh, you know what? The thing that I'm doing right now is not actually the thing that I want to be doing, and then made changes along the way to just bring yourself a couple steps closer to that goal. So, you know, if that's you, for sure, email us or tweet at us or Instagram us too. Because that's awesome. We would love to hear that story.
Yeah. And I know there's always that big debate about whether or not people should re-listen to audiobooks that they liked or reread books that they've read before. And I am a huge rereader. I love to read things like comfort food, is how I treat them. But I think this is also just a reminder that that is not wasted time. Going back to something that you loved and that spoke to you once is not wasted time. And so don't get down on yourself or think that that book doesn't, you know, count towards your reading goal or reading new material, because it's constantly shaping your brain and kind of reaffirming to you that this is the right path. If it speaks to you a second time or a third time or a fourth time, clearly it is resonating for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, just the number of times that the two of us collectively have reread Essentialism since we started this podcast is probably approaching double digits. And
it probably is.
Yeah. And so it's even, that's probably even like another, I don't know, another benefit to this is that when you say that you're rereading Essentialism, I'm like, oh yeah, I should do that. Or like, we'll talk about it here. And I'm like, oh yeah, I need to flip through that again. And it's just, it just brings you back to those resources that are worth revisiting. So we have tweaked our lives, so to speak, more drastically recently than we had in the past. And we have been making some form of progress. So let's hear about what sort of progress you have made in the last month or two.
Yeah, I think I should start by clarifying, too, that when we say Growing Gills, we mean this book by Jessica Abel, who we interviewed 2 episodes ago here in this season. So I believe it was season 5, episode 7. We interviewed Jessica Abel after both reading a book that she had written on creative focus and finding the focus you need to move forward on your creative stuff. And so we interviewed Jessica, and it was such a good interview. And Ashley and I both were so seriously impacted by this book that we recorded an entire solo episode with just the two of us talking about all the things we were putting into place from the book. And that was episode 8 of season 5. And so now we're 45-ish days into actually putting into practice what Growing Gills taught us. And so that's where we're at when we're checking in today. So my goal from Growing Gills for the month of March was essentially that I wanted to restart my novel. I've had a novel kind of clunking around in piles on my desk or in my desk drawers and on my hard drive for probably 5 years now, which is an embarrassingly long amount of time. And it's gone through a couple different iterations. It went through a small workshop at one point, and I've never quite finished a final first draft. So what I wanted to do for my goal was to kind of sift through what I already had, collate it into something, and decide what I could keep and what I needed to get rid of, and then pull what I wanted to keep into a software called Scrivener, which helps you write a novel. And in the month of March alone, I spent 13.75 hours on my novel in just 26 days. I wrote it down. I've been keeping track in the top of each day in my Get to Work book, like how much time I spend, or even like yesterday I wrote down my word count because I was like, you know, I'm not really feeling like writing, but it's the first day back from vacation. And I know if I don't get out of bed and I don't start writing now, I'm not going to this week. I'm going to like be like, oh, I'll just start next Monday kind of thing. So I got up and I wrote anyway, and I spent, you know, 20 minutes and I wrote like 600 words. Like that's nothing to shake a stick at. And I don't know if they're words that will stay in the novel, but they are words that, you know, helped me learn about the characters and are continuing to like situate the plot in a way that makes sense. And so for me, it was good. And I just want to say too, that 13.75 hours in 1 month is more than the entire last 2 years combined in 1 month. And I just can't get over it when I stop and think about those numbers. So I even started writing more in the novel in the month of March, which wasn't even my goal. So I feel like I more than met that goal. And in the whole process, I had a bunch of epiphanies, excitement those first few days, like this is coming together. I'm actually doing this. This feels really good. And then a couple days later, like, oh my word, this is so much work. Why am I doing this? And then a couple days later, like the realization, like, yes, this is work. Writing a book should not be a cakewalk. And you're not going to just write a book and be done, which is how I've always felt it was supposed to be. Like if it's a good book, it'll just come out. But I will need to go back and add like layers and layers and layers to this. Like my first few chapters aren't finished chapters. But also just learning all of that and internalizing it and realizing like I'm actually really ready to do the work this time. I'm not convinced it's going to be easy and I'm ready to do the real work. And that has been a valuable point of learning for me.
Yeah, there is something to be said for being ready to do the work. And a lot of what you said resonated with me because in those ups and downs of writing, I have a tendency to get too stuck in the feelings about it and in the way I feel. Like I don't feel like writing, or I don't feel like this is going well, or I don't feel like I have enough time to spend on this right now. And those are things that will completely trip me up. Like I need to just sit down and do it anyway. And so acknowledging that you are ready and you are prepared and you have what it takes and you're going to put your focus towards this thing, I think is a really important step. That's awesome that you've gotten so much done.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels good. And it's definitely gotten harder as I've gone. I feel a lot less motivated now that, you know, quote unquote, the easy writing is done. I'm not just going back to previous drafts and pulling stuff out that I like. I'm actually having to write forward and figure out plot holes, which I also never figured out in previous drafts, and got to try to figure out how to get characters from the beginning to the end. And that is hard. I mean, I like puzzles, but this is a tough puzzle. So definitely lacking in the motivation department most days, but still just trying to get up and do something, which is kind of how you feel about it too, I think.
Yes, for sure. So the background on my novel is I had the idea towards the beginning of 2017, end of 2016. So we're about like 2.5 years into me having this thought that would become a novel potentially someday. And at that point, I had, let's see, Hadley would have been 2 and Reagan would have been like 6 months old. And I was just not in a place to really give it that much thought, but it was just kind of simmering. And then last year, so January of 2018, I took a writing workshop, just a short weekend online thing to sort of kickstart the whole novel, get a plot outlined, and just really put some time into it. And I did not spend more than probably 10 hours that entire weekend working on it, but I outlined the whole thing. I really fleshed out some of the character stuff, some theming, and that's when I was really like, oh, I really want to do this. I want to make this a priority. But at that point, I was like 3 months away from giving birth to Conlin, my third baby. And I was like, oh, this is probably not a super good time to start writing a book because I'm going to have a newborn again in just a little bit here. And I had like client work that I had to finish up before maternity leave. So once again, it got put on the back burner. And now Conlin just turned one. We've just had our growing Gills epiphany. And I am carving out the time, even though it's really difficult. So I did not have quite as much success as you did. I spent 5.5 hours in February and 6.5 hours in March working on my draft. And then so far in April, I have had 0 hours because, as Abby knows, my family has had mutant strep for the last like 6 weeks that would not go away. So two of my kids and myself.
Is that a technical term or is that one that you've just created?
That is my creation, yes. There is no other explanation for it, but basically three and sometimes even four of us in my household of five have been just taking turns being sick with strep for like 6 weeks. I mean, one of my kids has had it three times. So it's been a rough couple weeks and the writing got put on the back burner, but I am committed to getting back to it. So, but February and March actually showed more progress than I thought it would because that was what is 5.5 plus 6.5? I should have done math first.
We should not be mathing. 12.
Okay. Very good. We came up with the same number. So 12 hours total since I started really working towards this. And that was with only doing about 10 or 15 minutes per day. Because I'm writing typically during afternoon nap time, which is always a crapshoot because my oldest does not usually nap. She just has quiet time. The toddler is anyone's guess. And the toddler, if she does nap, doesn't always line up with when the baby naps. So that 10 to 15 minutes during nap time, I usually have at least one, sometimes two kids still awake and hanging out with me. And that time has added up to about 6,500 words that count towards like the actual novel, plus a couple more thousand that are not going to be in the book, but that I used for character development or approaching a scene from a different angle and then decided I don't like it, that kind of thing. But my goal is just 200 words a day. And aside from the month of April, I was hitting that. And that was really good for me to see that progress adding up, even though it feels like such an insignificant thing. It's just 10 minutes. It's just 200 words. It would be so easy to skip it because it doesn't really matter. But being able to do that consistently and then look back and see that it does matter has been really important to motivating me to get back into that habit and continue moving forward.
Yeah, and you have a really interesting setup, like the way you're writing your novel. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so I am taking a page out of Ron Vitale's book, which we interviewed him back a couple episodes. I want to say it was 3 episodes ago that we interviewed him, and we'll link to that in the show notes. But he said that he writes in Google Docs so that he's able to access his work from wherever he happens to be. And I decided to try that. So I am writing each chapter in its own separate Google Doc. And if it's a really, really busy day, I can do some writing on my phone, which is not my favorite. I kind of am not a phone person or a technology person in general. I'm very much so a Luddite. But I tried it one time sitting in the car outside the doctor's office when I had a couple minutes, and I actually hit my 200 word goal. And so I was like, well, it's not necessarily going to be well punctuated, but the words are there. So we're going for it.
Excellent. Do you do like voice to text at all?
No. Is that a thing you can do?
You can do that. I'm sure you can do it in Google Docs, but like you can, at least on this fancy dancy iPhone thing that I carry around, you can, like in my text messages, like if I'm texting you and my hands are full, I can just push a button and start talking and it will transcribe what I'm saying.
You see what I mean when I say that I'm like a Luddite? I did not know that. I don't know how well that would work for me.
You have to speak your punctuation. So you have to say like, "Hi, Ashley!" exclamation point, and actually say that so that it like puts in an exclamation point for you.
Interesting.
But it will do it. And I'm sure Google Docs is capable with your phone. I don't know.
That is,
you have to check it out, because then you could be driving and talking.
Well, probably not, because almost every time I'm driving, the kids are shouting nonsense at me from the backseat, and that would confuse the Google, I'm sure.
Even Google cannot handle that.
Yeah, but that is a really good tip, perhaps even for some of our listeners who are trying to figure out how to squeeze in more writing time. But yeah, that's it's been a good lesson for me to not necessarily feel like I need to have that perfect setup and that perfect writing space. And it's like, sometimes you've got 5 minutes in your car and you don't have your computer, but you do have your phone. So just get off Instagram and do the work.
That's a motivational poster right there.
Yeah. Like if you can type an Instagram caption or create an Instagram story or comment on someone else's Instagram, you could be writing your book.
Thank you for coming to Ashley's TED Talk.
Yes. That's it.
Oh, goodness. So that's where we're sitting right now, kind of working in little fits and spurts to try to get these novels off the ground. I love that this podcast has become a How We Write Novels podcast. It never was before.
Yes.
So apologies to anyone out there who's not writing a novel. We're sorry. So what are you doing in the next 30 days? We've done 30 days. What are you doing in the next 30 days and maybe even past that on into summer?
Yes. So it's funny. In our outline, you have written here in all capital letters, "Reconstruct your entire house, hopefully," with many exclamation points, which is basically what we're doing for this summer. We've decided to stay in this house that we have mostly outgrown with three kids. And so we are doing some major, major renovations. Several people have looked at our blueprints and said, "Oh, so you're building a new house on top of your old house." And it's going to be just a very intense process where we are not living at our house for a portion of the summer, hopefully a small portion. That remains to be seen. and that is really probably going to take priority over a lot of other things, because that's a lot of decisions to be made. That's a lot of overseeing things. As you know, Abby, you went through the house building and construction process a couple of years ago. So I will for sure be turning to you for venting and or advice. And so
you're welcome. Please do.
Yeah. So that's just going to take up a lot of brain space. I'm not going to be the person swinging the hammer, because no one wants a house built by me, but I am going to be doing a lot of mental processing and thinking and project management, which I'm terrible at. Mm-hmm. So it's going to just take up a lot of my time and my energy. So beyond that, my only real thing is to keep my business kind of moving forward, keep my kids alive and happy and healthy and occupied throughout the summer months when there is no school to entertain the preschooler, and just keep prioritizing the novel above other types of writing. So if that means less time on social media, that's fine. If that means that I am not journaling so much, that's okay. That's going to be on the back burner now until I get my 200 words in every day for the novel. And so I think I will be able to make it happen, but it's going to be, you know, it's life. It's just going to not look perfect. Mm-hmm. And I have learned to let go of that, thankfully.
That is good, because that, I think, is one of the hardest things to do, is get over that hump of, I want it to look like X, but instead it looks like Y, so I'm not going to even bother. I know that one very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are your plans for the summer?
Well, I am not building a house this year. Did that. We don't need to do it again. my goal is just to really stay on the wagon and not to get distracted, like I said earlier, by things that are shiny and new. I want to just keep saying no. I've gotten pretty good at not saying yes to things I don't want to do, which has been an issue for me in past years. And I want to keep writing, even if it's hard, even if I wake up and I'm like, ugh, I don't really want to work on the novel today, which there are going to be days like that. I want to still get up and do something just to prove to myself that I can. And just keep doing that over and over and over again. Otherwise, we don't have any big plans for the summer. We're not going on any trips. We're not going on any vacations, at least nothing planned at this point. We're planning to plant a small garden, so we'll try our hand at vegetable growing once again. And I just want to, you know, keep cooking real meals and keep writing and get outside and really enjoy this summer. Arthur wasn't walking last summer. He didn't start walking until the end of August. So I feel like now that he is walking and running and jumping and climbing, that opens up a lot of fun summer things that just weren't possible last year. So hopefully we can get outside and enjoy it.
Yeah, that totally is a game changer when your baby is like a more confidently mobile. Conlin is still not quite walking. He just turned one. And so I am not totally sure how the summer is going to go with him. He seems like the kind of kid who would be totally fine just crawling around in the mud and the grass, but I don't know if I want him to do that. So,
how much laundry do you want to do?
I know, right? Well, we'll just see how it all goes. But yeah, getting outside definitely makes a big difference when you've got little kids around because, you know, sometimes you can just be like, okay, you go play or you're at the park or you're in the swing or whatever. And now you've got some more writing time that you did not have before. So there you go.
We'll see how that works. Yeah. But otherwise, Ashley and I are brainstorming and are hoping that we're able to finagle some kind of weekend retreat for the two of us together in the same place over the summer. So we'll see if that happens. We'll keep you posted. But otherwise, we talked about maybe doing a, we don't know when we're coming back. It'll kind of depend on Ashley's house construction and all of that sort of thing. Like, she needs to have a place to record a podcast. But we might try to even just do a one-off episode towards the end of summer with like a summer reading wrap-up, because summer reading is some of the best reading a lot of the time, and it would be a shame to miss out on talking about that.
Yes, totally, totally agreed. And our book episodes are always, I feel like they're the ones that we have the most fun with and then we get the most response to. So it's always
probably
it's always kind of fun. We would for sure love to do that. And maybe if we meet up for a weekend writing retreat, we would record something then too about, I don't know, how we structured our days or I don't know. There are many.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
There are many possibilities. So we're, you know, we're not going to be like going away forever, but we are just going on a little bit more of a looser schedule while we figure out what we're doing with ourselves for the next couple months.
Yeah, and summer's a good time to do that.
Yes, it always is. And so right now we are also in the middle of the 100 Days Project, which is something that we have talked about here before. And so we figured that we would just give a little update on how that is going. So what are you doing for your 100 Days Project this year?
I feel a little fraudulent saying that I'm doing a 100 Days Project this year because I feel like I am less than 50% on mine. But my goal with 100 Days this year was to do something that wasn't going to interfere with my creativity at all. And that was just good for me physically. I'm very good at ignoring like my physical self in pursuit of intellectual self stuff. That would be my personality type. Thank you. And so my goal was to stretch for 10 minutes every day, which sounds so easy and so simple. And yet I am so bad at it. But I'm calling it a victory because normally I would stretch like one day a week, which is not enough. And I've pretty consistently stretched like 3 to 4 days a week in the last, I don't know, how long has it been going on? 20 days?
Yeah, something like
days,
that.
Something
it's
like that.
It's coming up on a month.
So better than it could be, not a true 100-day project because I'm not doing it every single day, which is sad.
Well, that's okay because I have felt like a fraud doing the 100-day project for the last like 2 years in a row. So that's
pretty
fine.
Much.
This year, I feel like I'm actually doing it. I was originally planning on 100 days of handwriting because I really dislike my handwriting. And it has recently come to my attention that if I like practiced, I could change and improve my handwriting, which is something I would like to do. And I thought that would work really well side by side with my kids because my preschoolers working on her letters and stuff, so it would just be like an easy project to do near them. And when the project started, I was just like, oh, but this isn't the thing that's interesting to me right now. I want to knit. So I'm working on knitting a sweater, which is kind of a big deal because I get really bored knitting big projects. I'm like so full of enthusiasm at the beginning and then I get really bored. But I have not had a perfect everyday record, but I have been doing this more consistently than I was writing over the last month, because when you're completely brain dead and everyone's sick, you can still pick up a sweater and knit a row where you can't necessarily form coherent thoughts for a novel. So it's been good to have that as a creative outlet. Again, it's a lesson in progress adding up over time, because I don't feel like I ever knit very much in one shot, but I am almost done with the sweater back, which is, I don't know, that's got to be probably at least like 30 or 40% of the way through the project, because the back and the front are the biggest parts and then the sleeves are smaller. So so I feel like I'm making really good progress there. And the only thing that's kind of discouraging about it is that I only like to knit if I'm also watching TV. So while I do feel like I'm making really good progress on knitting, I also feel like I'm watching too much TV, and that's time that I could be spending reading or writing. So, you know, there's a trade-off, like there always is with these things. Nighttime is when I usually knit, and that's not necessarily my best writing time, but I have totally noticed a drop-off in my reading. So that is disappointing.
Yeah, I get that. You can only do one thing or the other. And you taught me to knit last October when you were here in Madison.
Yes, I did.
And from October to April, guys, I made one washcloth. That is how quickly I knitted.
That's an accomplishment, though, when it's your first thing that you're making. And I saw a picture of it. It was pretty good for a first washcloth, for a first knitting project.
Has a bit of a volcano look to it, like it, you know, teeters upwards. but I will say that as a newer knitter, I couldn't even watch TV and knit at the same time. Like, I had to have full focus on the knitting, and so that's probably why it took me 6 months to make like a 6x6 square.
Yeah, you get past that.
Yeah, you get past that. Good. And your sweater, I feel like I saw on Instagram, is multiple colors and things too. And so I don't even know how to switch off yarns and all that fancy stuff. So I'm impressed from afar.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You'll get there eventually. It's not someday. As difficult as it looks. It's one of those crafts.
Okay, good, good. So that's the 100-day project. And what have you been reading lately? You said you haven't been reading as much, but have you been reading anything at all?
Barely. So the last book that I finished was honestly like 4 weeks ago, and that was A Room with a View by E.M. Forster. I think I mentioned that one in our book episode at the end of 2018. That was one that I wanted to read this year, so I did that. And that was a really great classic. It was short. It was an easy read. It was charming. It was funny. And it really reminded me of why I became an English major and why I loved reading classics when I was younger, because I have not made that much time for them since graduating college. And I don't know if college like ruined me for literature for a couple of years, but A Room with a View, I believe that. A Room with a View really gave me that window back into that part of myself, and I really enjoyed it. So I want to continue making space for worthwhile classics, because that was just a really good book. I enjoyed it. Aside from that, I tried reading The Uninhabitable Earth by David Wallace Wells, which is about climate change. And it was very, very, very dense. It wasn't poorly written. It was just a lot of information and a lot of notes that I kept flipping back and forth to read further on. And the writing style was not necessarily easy to read, and I just could not get through it while everybody was sick. I only made it through like the first chapter, and then I had to give it back to the library so it didn't go overdue. So once the hold line goes back down on that one, it was pretty long because it's a new release and it's a hot topic, I might go back to it because it was interesting. I'm not sure if I was going to agree with all of his conclusions because I didn't get far enough into it, but I would like to return to it someday when my brain is fully functional. And then right now I am about halfway through Leigh Bardugo's newest book, which is The King of Scars, which is kind of a follow-up to her previous book series, which is the Grisha trilogy and The Six of Crows, which is a duology. There are two books there. This is the next book in that world, and that's been a really nice, nice world to dive back into from an author I already enjoy.
Yeah, that would be an easier one to pick up while people are sick and, you know, whining all around you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I just read King of Scars as well a few weeks ago, and I really enjoyed it. Ashley and I were talking before we started recording that it has some flaws, but I think it holds up as a good next installment in the Grishaverse, is what they call it.
Yes.
I actually read quite a bit in the last month, and so I'll just pick a couple of things that I read to talk about here. I finally read Department of Speculation by Jenny Offhill, or Offill, O-F-F-I-L-L. Several people recommended this to me, and it was really good. It's postmodern contemporary fiction is what I would call it, so it is not for everybody. But she has... The book is about a woman who is married and has a kid and is also a writer and a professor, and it really talks about how her art has suffered since becoming a mother in a lot of ways, and how she wishes she could become an art monster, is what she calls it, and not care about anyone else's feelings and not take care of anyone else and just take care of herself and her art, which I think is something we have all thought secretly in our own brains. And so it's just interesting to see her character kind of interacting with that thought and how reality looks very, very different. So it had a lot of really great observations on motherhood and work and the ways in which those two things intersect. So I would recommend that if you like that sort of thing, I guess. But again, it's not going to be for everybody. It's a little bit wacky is how I'm going to say it. And then I also read, I can't believe I've never read it before, Nora Ephron's essay collection called I Feel Bad About My Neck. And I borrowed it from the library and immediately bought a copy of my own to keep. It was that good. Ephron, I love her movies. Of course, I'm that sap who loves You've Got Mail and When Harry Met Sally and all of those. And her writing, you can just tell why those movies are so quick and witty and stick with you, because her nonfiction essays are the exact same. And I laughed out loud about even essays about her talking about growing older. So that I thought was really worth picking up. And it would be an easy one to pick up and put down to in a busy season. So I highly recommend that one.
Yeah, I have never read any Nora Ephron either. And I have to admit, we had a rainy day here the other day and I wanted to get some knitting done. The kids were all awake and I was like, it's not a good time to read. It's not a good time to write. So I set them up with some coloring stuff and I watched You've Got Mail for the very first time.
No.
I know. Oh, everyone is astonished when they heard that I have not seen it. And I'm like, it's just, we didn't have it on DVD or VCR, VHS when I was growing up. And so we didn't have cable and I just never had the opportunity to see it. And now I was like, well, I could stream it, I suppose. And so I did. And I knit a large chunk of my sweater while I did so. So I definitely could see wanting to read some of her works after experiencing that movie now and getting a little bit of taste of the kind of things that she can write.
Yeah, that movie is my go-to when I am sick or just want some like comfort food in DVD form. It's You've Got Mail or, and I'm ashamed to say this, the Keira Knightley version of Pride and Prejudice with Matthew McFadden.
That is also one of my favorites. And okay. I love the Keira Knightley version. I love the music.
Yes, I have the soundtrack. It's delightful.
Because when I've seen a movie so many times, I don't always pay that much attention to it, but I like hearing the music and then you know exactly where they are in the movie because you've seen it so many times. Yeah. Yes, that's the appeal.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's my movie confession. I've never seen the really long one with Colin Firth in it. I've never seen the BBC Pride and Prejudice.
I have not either.
Oh, well then, I'm in good company. Excellent. Yes.
I tried watching it one time and I think I made it like 15 minutes in and I was with a group of girls that I didn't really like and I just left. It was in high school. And I was like, no, I think I have something else to do. Bye.
Yeah, well, Lizzie Bennett would approve.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And then one other book I wanted to talk about, which is fun, is Austin Kleon's Keep Going. I got that one in the mail when it released a couple of weeks ago, and it's well worth a read. We have talked over and over again about Austin Kleon on this podcast. He wrote Steal Like an Artist and Show Your Work, which are both worth reading. And I think Keep Going is the perfect book for the season that we were all in politically and in parenting and all of that. Like, the message is just to trudge along, keep going. It gets better, I promise. And it was really fun because he actually quoted Department of Speculation by Jenny Offhill in it, which I had just read like two books previous. I always really love when it's the books that you're reading like reference each other. It feels like a little special like code word or something.
It does. Like, oh, you did that just for me. That was great.
Yeah. It feels really special. So that's what I've been reading. Everything's been pretty good. I haven't had too many duds, I don't think. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, that is amazing. Good book news all around, and hopefully more reading in our future, because I feel like summer always lends itself to more books and just a slower pace somehow. Maybe that's just us. And we have often wondered if that's only because we're in the upper Midwest where the world stops when the sun comes out. But there it is.
It really does. I think it is a special, special world here in the land that is cold for 9 to 10 months of the year.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that is what we are going to be up to on summer vacation, guys, working on novels and hopefully keeping children alive and all of the life essentials, plus building a house for Ashley. So we will keep you guys updated when we're coming back for season 6 someday in the fall, hopefully, and we'll see you on Instagram.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.